swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall, it is gone! Cassis does it again!
Again!
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over!
The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
Heyo, welcome back to Play Testy. It's episode 86. If you're listening on drop day, it's June 27th. Pretty anticlimactic here because there's never been an 86 for the Red Sox. The third game in the series got rained out. This is the official podcast of Daddy Gang getting rained out of the ballpark, also known as the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. Before we get going, before we talk about this riveting series, it actually was a really entertaining series for the games that were played. It's weird that it's only two games, but before we get going there, hit that subscribe button. Whether you're listening on the Odyssey app or Apple or Spotify, hit the subscribe button and rate us 5 stars. It really helps us out a ton, so we really appreciate when you guys do that. You can also find us on YouTube. We're on WEEI's YouTube channel, so you can find us there as well. Hit the thumbs up on those videos. Also helps us out a ton. Follow us on the socials at PlayTessie on both Twitter and Instagram. We continue to have awesome content coming out on those platforms all the time, so you best be following. Here with Sammy. Here with Joe, who's in for Pat, who is at the Zach Bryan concert. I hope he's okay. I hope that concert's happening.
Yeah, last we heard from Pat, he was in a shelter in place kind of situation, as ordered by the Gillette Stadium staff. So hopefully the rain is not as bad in Foxborough as it is here in Boston.
Well, meanwhile, we got some great security and other Red Sox or Fenway staff just standing out on the field while the lightning is striking and creating fancy artwork in the sky over Fenway.
Why are they still there? They've called the game. Why are they still on the field?
Well, they just got to make sure everyone vacates the premises, make sure everyone's okay.
No slip and slides allowed.
Like the forecast today had rain, like light rain at like 10 PM when I checked this morning, but it was like 30%. And now we got like Zeus throwing lightning bolts at Fenway Park from above. This is pretty some pretty crazy lightning. I kind of like when this happens once in a while, but not during a Red Sox game.
I just only wish I was amongst like the civilians in the concessions in that area, because I know the last time there was a big rain delay, there were fans making it a slip and slide. So I just wanted to see if it was happening again. But yeah, videos have been going around how the water has been basically just like flooding the stairs. Like
yeah, that's the clip. That's the clip of the night, is the water pouring down the stairs in the concourse.
You know what's nasty though? When it is a rain delay at Fenway and you're kind of in the concourse and everybody's super crowded together and it's like 75, 80 degrees and still humid. Humid. You can smell the sweat in the air and some fat guy named Donnie rubs up against you like, oh, get off me, dude. You're sweaty. And he's like, no, it's just rainwater. And you're like, no, dude, you stink.
I'm kind of on board with you. I kind of like the occasional storm. Like, it's interesting. It's really, I'm in New Hampshire right now, and like, it's not like nothing is happening here. So very strange to see how bad it is.
So nice for you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping to get some pool time in tomorrow, but we'll see. But it's a weird feeling right now. Recording. Oh yeah, there's the rainwater going down the stairs. But yeah, it's a weird feeling because the second game, obviously the first game was the incredible comeback in the eighth inning. And the second game was the disaster third inning for Bayo and disaster with the defense, just a disaster game overall. And I tweeted this in the middle of the game, sort of like already waving the white flag, that like, I'm really excited for tomorrow's game because like, it feels like this team has turned a corner, but we'd seen so many times in the last couple of seasons that the team would win 5 out of 6 and you'd feel really good. And then they would lose like 4 out of 6 to bad teams. And you'd be right back where you were before the hot streak. I thought today's game, the third game in the series, would be a good opportunity for the Sox to show who they are against a pitcher that I think they would have been able to hit. Obviously they didn't hit him in the first inning, Yariel Rodriguez in the first inning that we saw, but it feels empty to be recording here. Like, I feel like we would have had a definite emotion. It would have either been pure frustration to lose 2 out of 3 to the Blue Jays and lose to a beatable pitcher, or it would have been great. Like, they responded to some adversity in the second game, a really bad game on a lot of accounts, and they respond like, and now we're just here, and I don't even really know what to say.
Yeah, Cutter looked good too. He only pitched what was that, 1.1, 1.2 innings he got in today, but he had two strikeouts early on. Two of his first four outs were strikeouts. So yeah, it's kind of anticlimactic. I really was looking forward to this game. I was saying earlier today or yesterday, as we record on Wednesday evening here, it feels so good to be excited about Red Sox games, important Red Sox games, because this is kind of the trade deadline home stretch. In the baseball season, there's like two home stretches. There's the trade deadline, which is where you find out if you're going to contend as the season goes on, and you got to be hot towards that point of the season, which is now. And then there's the home stretch as the season is winding down, which is still a few months away. But the Red Sox they're hot right now. They've won a lot of their last four of their last four series, and then the other one was just a split. So they haven't lost a series in a long time. They're hot. They're fun. The players are giving great quotes. Zach Kelly with an awesome quote to our friend Gabriel Starr. We can pull that up later. Great stuff. Don't let the Sox get hot. And then we get this. It's kind of just a wham, wham, wham. And it's extra annoying because Thursday is an off day. It's like we don't get the Sox for like two days. It's like a little break. And on the bright side, at least the bullpen gets rested.
Yeah, I mean, they really, like, especially right now, they could really use it after that Cincinnati series. I mean, there was a reason we can talk about game one, where they had to put in Isaiah Campbell in a 2-2 ball game because first of all, he was called up, and Josh Winkowski, they were both called up because the bullpen was insanely taxed after Nick Pivetta went 4 1/3, and then the next day was a bullpen game in which everyone had to get used. Like Brad Keller was going to be tasked with trying to finish off a game with a sizable lead. He let in 3 runs in his inning. And guess what? After that, you have to use all of your setup men and your closer. And that means you have to option Cam Boozer, get Josh Winkowski and Isaiah Campbell up. And now Isaiah Campbell has to enter in a tie ball game. And it almost led to disaster because to be quite frank, he was really bad. It was a 2-1 ball game, if I'm not mistaken. And how, for whatever reason, at the end of starts, when he comes out with guys on base, he never, like, the pen always for Hauk lets them in. But it was obviously made worse when Vlad Guerrero hits one like double across the street and it's a 6-2 ball game. It feels like it's over. They put in Chase Anderson because that's like the white flag. It's over. And then everything great happened. But I mean, you were in that spot because the bullpen was taxed. So as you said, Sammy, really good that they're going to get a couple of days to rest the bullpen. So like obviously could be good for the Sox, but not good for us as fans. Like I don't watch the damn games.
Right. Yeah. And that kind of says it all. You're in a 2-1 ball game. You put in Isaiah Campbell, who hasn't pitched since, I believe, the first month of the season, April, you could say. It started in March, but April. He hasn't pitched since April. And yeah, he just didn't look good. He was missing his spots. It was kind of the book that we had on him in the offseason, that he has good stuff, but he gets way too much of the strike zone. And that's exactly what he was doing on Tuesday evening. And it just kind of fell apart. But like I said, that's kind of the state of the bullpen. Put in Keller the other day. He doesn't do good. And that kind of hurts you because then you got to use other guys. And it just snowballs. And we've seen this. We've heard this story before. So yeah, it sucks that the rain delay is going on, but in the long run, this probably helps the Red Sox kind of in a significant way. I mean, imagine they restarted the game. We're talking right now. It's a little bit past 9:40 p.m. So Cutter Crawford's done. There's no way he's coming back out. You would have had about roughly 8 innings of outs to get with your bullpen. Again, a night after you used, like, or 2 nights after you used Isaiah Campbell in a 1-run game, a lot of things were not going too well, I think, in terms of bullpen use. So as disappointed as we are as fans, like staff-wise, not the worst thing ever for the Reds.
Yeah, when you look at this for a week from now, you're not going to be complaining about, oh, the last game of the Toronto series got postponed, and now the August series is going to be a 4-game set with a doubleheader to start it off. No, the bullpen absolutely needed all of the time to rest. Like I would say multiple guys earned the rest. Kenley has earned it. Martin has proved it. Winkowski has earned it. So it's really a blessing in disguise for this team, especially, I know we'll get into the Padres series coming up, but the Padres are a very, very good team. They're a very dangerous team offensively. So you're going to need your entire pitching staff almost at full strength. So while the here and now, it absolutely sucks, like you guys are saying, big picture, this is as good as another win for the Sox.
You think they make any moves? Like, do you think they bring Boozer back up, send somebody down for the Padres series? Because he's got to be arrested at this point. The reason he got sent down, Gordo, you kind of alluded to it, is the bullpen was burnt out. Boozer had pitched 3 days in a row, so they sent him down because he has options, has absolutely nothing to do with ability at all. They needed arms, set him down. I assume he comes back up for the weekend series.
Well, they can only do that if someone gets hurt. Otherwise, he has to spend the 10 days.
Yeah, fuck.
I mean, they could flub an injury, but I feel like it would only be for Campbell, and that might raise an antenna, especially after the Mets guys got popped. I don't know, but he'll be up. I mean, he got called up. When did Boozer get options? So it was before Monday.
Yeah, so he's still so got.
He has to go until like next Thursday or Friday.
Yeah, like a week left. Damn, that's right. That's right. It's like the most forgotten.
But either way, though, like we're not even just talking about 2 days off here. Sox lost the second and now final game of that series, but the only relievers, and if you want to say Winkowski is going to start now on Sunday, so the only reliever that was actually used in that game was Weissert, and the game before it was Campbell, Anderson, Jansen. So all of these relievers that got taxed in the Red series, like we're talking Zach Kelly, we're talking Bernardino, we're talking Chris Martin, we're talking Justin Slayton. They got Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and are about to get Thursday off. So that pen's going to be fresh for San Diego. So, I mean, I feel like it's, I don't know. It's as for the Sox, it's good that it happened. For us, it sucks. But I think we need to get into the discussion about what happened in the eighth inning of this first game. Because this game before the game had vibe time written all over it. Me, Big Brave Dog, and myself, we were on the field. Before the game, we were hoping to be able to talk to some of the Celtics players because we heard they were going to be in attendance. Unfortunately, they only literally came out of the dugout to throw the first pitch and then went back in the dugout and back to their seats. So they didn't stand on the field at all. But it was great to see those guys up close. The crowd loved them. It was cool. I watched Tom Werner watch the video about the Celtics winning the championship, which I found like kind of entertaining and ironic in a way. I don't know. Just weird. It's just weird to see him do it after the way ownership treated this team in the offseason. But yeah, the vibes were high and then it went down the tubes, but then the eighth inning just saved it. I mean, David Hamilton continues to hit. Romy Gonzalez continues to be just such a timely, solid piece. Like, I don't know if anyone thought when the Red Sox got Romy Gonzalez this offseason, claimed him from the White Sox, that he would maybe like ever play for the Red Sox. Like maybe he'd just be one of those guys that sticks around in spring training and then goes down and you never hear from him. Because there's tons of those guys that hey, you Bradfo, see in spring training.
Give our guy Bradfo some credit early on in spring training. He said, don't sleep on Romy Gonzalez. That was a good shot from half court by Bradfo.
Yeah, he was right.
A couple of those. You couple look of those with calling out Hamilton.
That's true. Dude. He called Hamilton too. Bradfo's got the eye.
Hey, you mentioned David Hamilton, home run. He is plus 3,000 to win Rookie of the Year right now. How do you not, if you're a sports betting person, how do you not sprinkle like $5 on David Hamilton? Plus 3,000?
It's not a terrible bet.
Myself, I don't gamble, but 21 steals, 782 OPS. I don't know, man.
And getting better.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got – the defense is going to hurt him, though. I was looking up his defensive numbers. Ugh, not great. But still, come on. Like, who cares? It's Rookie of the Year. Defense, it's for nerds. Vote for the guy who's got a good OPS and steals a lot of bases.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's great to see him continue to hit because and we'll probably talk about this on the next episode about some potential trade rumors for the Red Sox, but – there were people throwing out lineups with potential trade additions, and like they had David Hamilton in it, and it looks solid 1 through 9 because you've got guys like David Hamilton stepping up. This isn't a guy that anyone expected was going to be much of anything, if maybe not even in the bigs, the entire, like, I don't think any of us thought he would be in the majors, not to mention in the lineup close to every day, certainly every day against righties. So, I mean, it's just, it's been great what you've gotten from him. It's been great what you've gotten from Romy. And then obviously Jarren Duran finishes the job in the ninth with, and it was a pure electric factory. Derek White wearing the Baseball Isn't Boring shirt. They're putting them all over the Jumbotron and on Nesson. That was awesome.
Love it. And of course it was Jarren Duran. The guy is just, I mean, what do you even say? We didn't have to have this conversation again for like the third episode in a row, but man, he's just, everything he touches turns to gold right now.
Yeah, and what happened at Fenway, I know, Gordon, you had left before, but I was there, and the vibes, it was insane. I talked to so many people up here in the booth, in the media row. They all said the energy has never been like this in years. And even Cora, post-game, said the energy was just like 2021. And I don't know. I mean, you could contribute it to the Celtics being there. In the booth watching, you could contribute it to just the fans in general, but it was insane. Like the place, it felt like an earthquake during that inning where they started to come back. But I did want to ask you guys, because everyone was kind of saying that this game might be the best of the season, but we literally said that weeks ago about that Sunday night game against the Yankees. So which one do you think is better? Or was better? Which one would you call the game of the year?
It's for two different reasons, I feel like. You're right. I'm guilty of saying both of these games are the game of the year. Oh God, that's a tough one, Joe.
Yankees won, because if you remember before that series, we all were saying, I hope they don't get swept. We weren't even considering the fact that they would win the series. And then that was Sunday night. That was the series winning game. Sunday night baseball. It was big. Red Sox, Yankees. I have to go that by a smidge, just because another thing, that felt like the
turning point.
Yeah, maybe not the turning point, because when you look back, the Philly series was more the turning point up until now. But I don't know. There was something about that Sunday night Yankees game, the stage, the opponent at Fenway, the expectation, just blowing by the expectation. I got to go with that one. But this one against the Blue Jays, not to take anything away from it, that was unbelievable. But that was probably the most kind of, I felt like they were going to lose game that they ended up winning, if that makes sense.
Yes. I am going to call that Yankee game, it really is kind of a two-game turning point to me, the Saturday and the Sunday game. But the Sunday game, just because it did, that game also, like when Zach Kelly entered the game with the bases loaded and no outs, it did feel like that game was going down the tubes. But I'm going to call that game the turning point in the year, because we'd seen them beat good teams, and this dates back to last season too. We'd seen them beat good teams, but they hadn't strung it together. Them winning that series against the Yankees was kind of a turning point. This game was the most obvious loss that turned into a win this year, and the Red Sox just haven't had very many of those wins this year, but lately there have been a few of them, and this was obviously the most improbable comeback on the ledger of those games. I'll give it to this one. The game of the year, with the Celtics in attendance and Jarren Duran vying for the All-Star game spot, just continuing to prove just how electric he is. Like, you don't forget that catch at the beginning of the game. Before all the craziness happened, he made a great catch in center field, just further highlighting how much better he's gotten as a defensive outfielder. I love when a guy, like, we're trying to start narratives. Like, we've been trying to, like, get this narrative of Jarren Duran being a star going. And I love when those narratives start and then the guy continues to do what started the narrative. Like, so many times, like last year when I said Jarren Duran should be an all-star, the second I said it, he went into a cold streak. Like, that feels like it's always what happens, but this time it's just been so different. I'll give this one the game of the year. Sox Jays down 4 in the 8th. That's a loss.
For me, it's like so close. It's like 51-49, 52-48, but I would sort of lean towards the Yankees as well. I think in terms of just like the overall vibes and energy, I think you have to give it to this one, because for Sox Yankees, as you said, Sunday night, the stage, but there were plenty of Yankees fans in attendance too. And even it was still kind of like, at least for me, it looked and it felt like it was still kind of like a 50-50 crowd. There were enough Yankee fans there. And the Blue Jays on the Monday game in game one, like, they weren't as energetic. And you could tell by that eighth inning that the Sox fans totally overcame them and overwhelmed them. And as I said, it literally felt like an earthquake. So the two are close, but I would still say like 52-48 then win over the Yankees, because that was the most impressive. And it was one of, I won't say it was the turning point, but it was one of the turning points for the Sox.
Improbable. It was improbable too.
And either way, unbelievable game, unbelievable comeback, unbelievable vibes. Cora doesn't say that shit lightly. Like, when Cora compares it to 20, like, no, that's, he's been saying all year, like, yeah, we've got a lot of visiting fans. Like, the vibes haven't been the same in a couple years. And like, that's sort of our fault. We haven't played and deserved those vibes. But when he says that, it's not smoke. Like, he means it, which is kind of
just to see Cora in a good mood. How good is it to see that? Like, it's been so long since we've seen him kind of not happy. Like, we've seen him happy, but like, no, rolling, like, good, feeling good about himself, feeling good about the team, feeling good about the atmosphere. It was just nice to see it. It really does feel like it's been since 2021.
Right. And to me, though, that's what made what happened in the second game all that much more frustrating. And obviously, like, this is a 162-game baseball season. There's going to be losses. There's going to be big losses. It was not a surprise. Like, it's just going to happen. But it was frustrating to watch the Sox, you know, Devers hits that early bomb, and you feel like that momentum is going to continue. And just, I don't even really know what to say about just how bad that third inning was. You put a couple of guys, like, obviously you put a guy on the bunt single, like, he hits, or I think it was Jansen hit something down the line to start the inning. And then Kiner Falefa hits the bunt single, which is a great bunt. And it felt like at that point, when stuff like that happens, that's when Bayo starts to mentally, I don't even know the word, but you know what I mean. And then the ball goes under Valdez's glove, and Willier throws it into the stands, and it's like probably like the worst fucking play of the year, if I'm being honest with you. And now you've got two runs scored and a man on third. And now Bayo's mentality is completely gone, walks the next two guys, and the inning just collapses from there. Seven runs, and it's just, the game's over. And I'll give you guys a chance to go, but that was probably I don't want to say the worst inning, because I don't really know, but it was up there. That was really, really, really bad.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that was the worst inning of the year. There have been a lot of painful innings this season, but that was definitely the worst Brian Bayo start we've ever seen. And look, he's a kid. He just turned 25. He's getting paid a lot, which translates to a lot of pressure. And I know people roll their eyes. They're not going to feel bad for a guy who's getting paid. But the fact of the matter is, when you're getting paid a lot of money and you're the only guy on the pitching staff who you can say that about, there's going to be a microscope on you. And that's kind of how it's been for Brian Bayo. I mean, you look back, aside from getting paid, he's being compared to Pedro Martinez, which is crazy. Only for the fact that they're about the same size, they're from the same place, and they both throw a changeup a lot. Like, other than that, like, these are two very different pitchers who go about things very different ways. It's an unfair comparison. And, you know, that's not the main factor with Bayo, but to put a bow on that, he's a kid and he's under a ton of pressure. And it seems like right now, when that pressure hits him in the middle of a game, it unravels, and it unravels quickly. You could see in the body language on Tuesday night, there were mistakes in the field. Maybe they weren't called errors. Who knows? They changed the friggin' official scoring 1,000 times. But his body language just isn't good. He slouches. You see him throw his arms up. He looks visibly frustrated. And if I can see that from the couch, then everybody in the dugouts and on the field can see that as well. And that's not a good message to be sending to the defense behind you. It's not a good message to be sending to the lineup. It's just not good in a million different ways. And he has to clean it up.
To me, it's extra frustrating just because a starting pitcher's job is not to be perfect. Like, when Kenley Jansen enters the game with a one-run lead, his job is to be perfect. With Bayo, you've got a two-run lead. You don't need to be perfect. Your job as a starting pitcher is to keep your team in the game and give them a chance to win. Sometimes that means you exit with a four-run lead. Sometimes that means you exit with a one-run deficit. But in both a four-run lead and a one-run deficit, you've given your team a chance to win. And there was no reason that third inning needed to spiral out of control and go for seven runs when you've got, yes, he was going to exit that inning after the Valdez and Abreu crazy crap play. That inning, the Blue Jays were going to get at least three runs that inning. That is something that in that moment as a pitcher, you have to accept, and you have to figure out a way to settle yourself down, throw strikes. You're facing the Blue Jays. This is not like the Baltimore Orioles lineup here. Like you're going to get guys to hit into outs. You just got to throw strikes. He's throwing the ball hard. Some people are saying he's throwing it too hard. I think you said that on the broadcast. I don't know how much I disagree with that, because for a guy like Bayo, it's about getting ground balls. So you got to throw strikes. You got to be able to locate. And it's been a problem for him for a long time now. He's now walked multiple guys in 11 of his last 12 starts. So I saw a lot of talk about people wanting to like put a ceiling on Bayo as whatever, like he's not going to be what they extended him to be, whatever. Like, I think we as Red Sox fans, especially like having watched Tanner Houck, have learned that this really is a year to year thing, and guys take giant leaps at random times. And I think it's stupid to cap a guy's potential, but I am worried that we might be, and I said this like a month ago, that I was worried that Bayo was not going to take any sort of step forward this year. I'm all that much more confident now that we're just not going to see it from him this year. But at this point, he really has to just figure out how to lock it the fuck down and keep the Red Sox in games. Because it's not at this point about taking that step forward to become a frontline starting pitcher. It's about figuring out a way to keep your team in the game every time you take the ball.
Yeah, the idea with those expectations, at least for fans from our side of you, is to normalize them. And part of it is because those within the Red Sox have put those high expectations. So as fans, we have to follow along and take their word for what they're saying and what they're suggesting, when reality is it's not even close to what they have said. And as you guys have said, it's a bridge year. This is a bridge year. And I don't think anyone was expecting Brian Bayo to absolutely be the shutdown ace like Tanner Houck has been on the year, but it all goes mental. This is all mental, and it's mental to the point where it's seeping in to the physical struggles that Bayo was going through. As you said, command is off. He's walking guys like crazy. And I love what you said, Sammy, about showing the frustration, the message that it sends to the team. If you're throwing your arms up and you're showing all this frustration, what's it saying to your defense and everyone else in the dugout? That means if we're not perfect, which this team is nowhere close to perfect, then this guy is going to get in trouble. So I think Cora did the smart thing, was to give him an extra time through the rotation, push him back until the next series, which is on Wednesday, because this needs to be a full mental reset. And I wouldn't be surprised if Bayo, after the All-Star break, especially with a full reset there, he starts pitching a lot better, because right now he's in his own head and players are getting into his head too with his own expressions. You said it perfectly on that night, Gordo. He did it all to himself.
Right. And Joe, to your point, the Bayo, the poor body language, it kind of reminds me of that story that we all heard the other day about Pat Murphy, who's the coach. He's the Milwaukee Brewers manager, but he managed Dustin Pedroia back at ASU. And he said there's a story about Pedroia. He kind of like he strikes out or he grounds out. He has a bad at-bat against the pitcher, and he slouches, and he comes back to the dugout, and he goes, "That guy's nasty." And Murphy pulls him aside, and he goes, "Dude, don't ever do that again. You are the best hitter in this lineup. When you say this pitcher is nasty, it tells all the other guys that they're going to struggle too, because you're the best guy here. So next time you face a pitcher and he's nasty, I want you to come back to the dugout and say, this guy sucks. We can hit him. Don't kill the morale." Same concept with Brian Bayo. You're the guy who's making the big bucks. You're supposed to be the de facto ace. Don't slouch. Don't look sad. If you struggle, you struggle. You can mope about it later, but you're a professional. Let's act professional. To that point, Brian Bayo spoke to the media today, and I want to read a quote so we're not completely, you know, dumping on the guy. Here's what he said about his actions on the field Tuesday night. He said, "I've been working on that personally since the minors, controlling those emotions. I think it's something that year after year I've done a really good job at doing, but this year it hasn't been that way. So I think that's a good point and something that I need to pay attention to." End quote. So at the very least, the kid just turned 25. Yeah, he's got his emotional problems, but he's self-aware. And I think that's the first step. I don't think this is going to plague him his entire career. He'll get over it. It's just going to take some time.
Well, what's also nice to see is that he's striving for perfection. I mean, how many guys out there are perfectionists? And I know he wants perfection, but eventually part of that maturity will be realizing taking those small losses instead of the big losses will eventually turn into wins.
You just got to figure out, even though you want to feel things in a certain moment, you have to do what's going to be best for you, for the team, for your numbers, like if that's what it all comes down to. Cause like in theory, if you're up 8-0 and you let up 5 runs, like that's shitty for your numbers, but the team still is going to be in a position to win the game. You just got to be able to settle yourself down, because that's the only way that you can really prevent massive collapse like that. I don't really don't know what I'm saying here, but to be honest with you, he didn't want to get pulled from that game. He said that after the game to the media as well. I like that. I like that he doesn't want to come out of the game. It's nice in theory that he wants to be a perfectionist. In the end, you just got to find the right mentality to keep yourself in line. But in the end, Josh Winkowski comes into the game after Weiser finished the inning. But Winkowski came into the game and threw 6 innings after that of 2-run ball, and he struck out 8, which was a career high. He pitched so well, he's going to get an extra start, as Joe mentioned, as Brian Baio gets pushed back. So good to see that Bayo's going to get an extra day. Winkowski kind of earned it with a good start, or with a good relief appearance. He earned a start. Bayo's going to get to go against Miami. So hopefully Baio figures a couple things out with Andrew Bailey in the meantime. I know that Andrew Bailey has been vocal. He spoke about it in the offseason about how his job is to try to limit ruts that pitchers get into and make it maybe even just like a couple innings of a slump before they figure out what's going on, as opposed to 7, 8, 9, 10 starts. But as I said before, it's been 11 out of the last 12 that Baio has walked multiple guys. The command is something he's going to have to figure out, along with controlling his emotions. It's a lot of work that needs to be done for Baio. And I think the frustration here from us, from fans, is just that it's not just that we have such high expectations from his prospect status, from the contract. It's that we just saw so much better from him last year, and even in his first cup of coffee in the majors. I know he can get back to that, but it's...
We expected more, though, too. We expected more to going 24 to 25 years old. He's the kind of... I've already said this phrase. He's the de facto ace, so he's not a traditional ace, but when you look at the staff coming into the season, he was...
He was the opening day starter.
We thought we'd get, you know, a mid threes ERA, mid upper threes, solid uptick in every category, and we just haven't. So, like you said, it's frustrating, but at the very least, he's self-aware. It's not like he's a nutcase and he doesn't think he's doing anything wrong. He knows there's issues and he'll address it. Alex Cora is great at handling these things, as we know. So just look ahead to the future. The next start is going to be a big one for him, yes. Not in terms of future and money and things like that, but just for the outlook of the rest of the season. You really, really want to see a refined version of him emotionally. And, you know, would almost be encouraging if he got into a little bit of a jam at some point and worked out of it, just so we could see it, see the maturity.
Yeah, I mean, that next start is going to be huge. I mean, I feel like it's been building to this for a while, and like we've been talking about it, but we also look at this team with like a magnifying glass in a way. Like, we are real deep in the weeds here, but it is out in the open right now. What is plaguing Baio, the command issues, the emotions, it is out in the open. It is being talked about. He has to face it head on. He's going to have extra time to do it. So we'll see how he responds. But I think it's about time we preview this next series with the San Diego Padres here coming up on Friday. It's the return of Xander Bogaerts. Psych, no, it's not. He's not going to play, but he is going to be there. So I am excited to see. Actually, I'm a little bit nervous about the reception that Xander is going to receive just after the non-reaction to Sale.
No, come on. No, Sale.
Dude, I wouldn't put it past him. I wouldn't put it past him at this point.
dude, if Xander doesn't get a good reaction, I might just, oh.
Dude, there's the Padres, no, it's going to be a bunch of Padres fans at the ballpark. They have some of the best, they have some of the best attendance numbers in baseball. They might have the best attendance numbers in baseball in San Diego.
They're not going to travel that much. San Diego, it's a tiny, tiny fan base. That's a really small market. I'm not worried about that. There's no way there's going to be a bad reaction for Bogart. There's no
way. Not a bad reaction. No. I'm worried that people are not going to be up and loud. I want it to be like.
You are, dude, you are not a fan of the Boston Red Sox if you don't like Xander Bogaerts. There is no way that you can follow this team and be like, screw that guy for taking the money.
It's not even like a bad reaction thing. I'm not even saying that. I just think that there's a chance that so many people going to these games these days are just like, oh, like saw like a good deal on like, oh, it's $25 for a ticket, a hot dog and a fountain drink. And like, oh yeah, I'll go. And oh, look, they're showing a video. I don't really know this guy. Oh, he's on the other team.
You don't want the lethargic reaction.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Because that's what was with Sale. It wasn't like Sale was getting booed. It's just that no one got up and cheered.
Well, I don't think it's going to be an issue because Sale was polarizing. I think in his later half of his Sox career, you've got those who, like the three of us, are very happy for what he had done through the last out of the 2018 World Series. Bogaerts was around much longer than that. Always a fan favorite. You know, you go in that time period, he's at least top three of favorite players. So I'm pretty sure fans will. No worries. No worries on any kind of muted reaction.
I need them to prove it first. I hope I'm overreacting here, but after Sale, I need the Red Sox fan base to prove to me that they're not this bad.
Yeah, but no one in that time hated Bogaerts. No one hated Bogaerts near the end of his run, unlike Sale.
But that's not the point. That it's lethargy that Gordo's afraid of. But wasn't Sale on a Tuesday or Wednesday?
Yes, it was a middle of the week series.
But this is like, a Friday night. This should be fine. There should be plenty of people in the house, plenty of young upstart folks that I used to be like, and they're going to be loud. I'm not super concerned about it, but I will be unbelievably disappointed if there's not a good reaction for Bogaerts.
Listen, I lean towards you guys. I think it's going to be – I think Xander also just, like, met more to people than Sale did, even, like, before the end of the Sale era. I do think Xander just had more of an emotional connection with the fans than Sale did. Being homegrown, there's a bunch of reasons for it. He was here longer, whatever. I lean towards it, but I am worried about it. After Sale, because Sale, like there's a big gap between what Sale got and what he should have gotten. So Xander should get all the way up here. And if he gets like halfway between what Sale got and he got, it's still not enough. Whatever. It's something I'm definitely going to be watching for. They're going to play a video. They're going to do something. He's going to be there. He's not going to be playing, but he'll be there. But let's preview the series. We got the Padres coming to town. They are 44-41, which is interesting. They've played five more games than the Red Sox. They're second place in the NL West right now. They just swept the Nationals in a three-game set. So they are on a three-game win streak at the moment. No Xander Bogaerts in the series. No Fernando Tatis Jr. in this series either. So Padres missing a couple of bats. Pitching matchups here. Randy Vasquez, who came over in the Juan Soto deal versus Nick Pivetta. Vasquez has a 5.10 ERA. Coming off five scoreless, though, 3 Ks against the Brewers in that start. Nick Pivetta's got a 4.06. He's coming off 4 1/3 innings of 3-run ball and 5 strikeouts against the Reds. Game two, you've got Michael King, who was also in the Soto deal, kind of the centerpiece there. 3.75 ERA, coming off 6 innings of 5-run ball and 8 strikeouts against the Brewers. He takes on Tanner Houck, the Red Sox ace. He's got a 2.18 ERA coming off 6 2/3 innings of 3-run, 2-earned run, and 7 strikeout ball against the Blue Jays. Game three, interesting one here. You got Matt Waldron on the mound for the Padres. Knuckleballer. Matt Waldron. The only knuckleballer in Major League Baseball. I believe he's like, who's the last one to, it was the Orioles guy, right? There was a guy in the Orioles that threw one and got
George
rocked Kirby. Around.
George, yeah, Kirby. Kirby threw one Kirby in the one. The day Wakefield died.
Yeah, if you want,
not
to count
a traditional, George, not a yeah, traditional.
He's not a knuckleballer. I don't know. It's just they're few and far between now. I don't know if there's. Oh wait, who's the other guy? Who's the former position player, the Angels guy, who's throwing him now? But he's getting like the gambling thing. He gambled with Otani.
Fletcher.
Fletcher's trying.
Yeah, he's in the minor league. That's a wild story. So he's a utility infielder for the Angels and the Braves, and then he goes down to the minors, and now he's a knuckleballer. Anyway, I'm rooting for him. I hope he.
I mean, hey, Wakefield was a hitter first too. So
yeah, shortstop.
Yeah. So, but Matt Waldron, he's throwing a knuckleball today for the Padres, and he's got a 3.43 ERA this year. He's coming off six innings of two-run ball with eight strikeouts against the Nationals. He will take on Josh Winkowski, who has, in the majors this year, a 3.26 ERA, though it was mostly in relief. He's coming off the relief appearance that we just discussed, save the Red Sox bullpen, six innings of two-run ball, eight strikeouts against the Blue Jays. Huge, huge outing, all things considered, to get that bullpen fresh for the Red Sox going into this series. Hitters to watch. There's really only one notable hitter this year in terms of the entire season. Jerickson Profar having like a random age 31 breakout, former top prospect in baseball, who was like one of these guys that was just like maybe not going to get signed. Sort of like the, he was like in like the Michael A. Taylor and like Tommy Pham group this offseason. Goes to the Padres, having an all-star season. He's got an 892 OPS for the year. He's the only player that we will see who has an OPS over 800. Though recently, Jackson Merrill, their top prospect, top 10 dude, has an 11-18 OPS and seven home runs in his last 14 games. So that is a guy who is breaking out in a big way right now. Definitely someone to be careful with. And then Kyle Higashioka, also in the Juan Soto trade, coming off a two home run, six RBI performance on Wednesday. So, Joe, let's get a standings update. It was a two game series instead of a three. So I can already spoiler, none of us got it right.
Yeah, no one got any picks right. Myself and Sammy went for the three-game sweep, and Pat and Gordo went for two out of three. So, as you said, no points. Standings stay the same. Sammy in first with 10, Gordo in second with 5, Pat in third with 4, me in last with 2.
Pat and I were going to get that. God damn. Ah!
You think, dude? You think?
Yeah, you never know. Bullpen could have been brought out there, and they could have been fatigued.
I know.
All right, well, why don't you get first crack at it then, Gordo?
All right, why don't I do it? I'm going to take win-win-loss here. I don't love the idea of facing the knuckleballer. Obviously, think they can hit Vasquez, think Houck's going to win his start. So win-win-loss, 2 out of 3 for the Sox. Sammy, what do you got?
I got the Red Sox getting swept. Everything is going way too well. Everyone thinks they're going to win. If I were a betting man, I'd say they probably win 2 out of 3, which means they're going to get swept. So I think this is going to be a terrible weekend, and we're going to be really depressed when we record on Sunday. Sorry.
Wow.
Damn.
Damn.
Straight up. Damn.
He comes out and attacks. He doesn't preface it. He's like, yep, going to get swept.
Yeah, you guys are
going to get swept.
Having fun? Yeah. Fuck you. We're getting swept. It's going to suck.
I respect it. I tried that strategy for a little bit earlier this year. It worked for one series and then it stopped. So I hope it doesn't work for you.
Yeah.
I do too. I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah. I too, like Sammy, am more of on the negative side, but they're not going to get swept. I think they at least get one game out of there. And I think they're going to get the Friday game. I just think with all the rest that the bullpen has got, I think that's going to be huge. And especially the energy in Fenway is going to be, I think it's going to be pretty high for a Friday night. So I think they get that game, but they're going to lose the two. I hate to say that on a Houck start, but I don't think Houck is going to get the loss, though. I think he'll probably get a no decision. I think he'll still pitch well, but I don't think the bullpen is able to hold him for that game. So I'll go 1 out of 3 for the Sox.
I like it. 3 different picks. On that note, Joe, Pat's not here, so you got to tell me, what's it time for?
Oh, of course, it is time for Crystal Bomb.
Bomb it.
So, only two games, but we did see some scoring from the Crystal Bomb. And yes, it was from Sammy. Used his Raffy Devers picks, and Raffy launched a couple of them. He closes the gap on Gordo's lead. So it's Gordo with 12, Sammy with 9, Pat with 3, and me with 2. So Sammy got Devers right. Gordo, Thick Willy did not go deep. For me, Sedaner did not go deep. And Manuel Valdez did not score one for Pat.
Wow. It's rough, guys. Yeah. What's it like?
I don't like getting closed in on. Willier was going deep off Yariel today. I hope you know that, Sammy. I have the script.
Yeah, dude, so do I. And unfortunately, the script did not happen. But my script portion sure as shit happened. By the way, Devers with maybe the funniest home run swing ever. He basically swung, almost fell over, but the ball went 467 feet, which is just so classic Rafael Devers.
Furthest of his career.
Yeah. Yeah. That's wild. He's smart.
All right, Joe. Joe, you're picking the order.
All right. Why don't we go with Sammy then? He's closing the gap. Let's see what he got.
Call me the gap closer. All right. Who do I want to go with here? I went Tyler O'Neill 2 weeks ago. I went Rafael Devers most recently. I'm going to go with... I'm pondering. Thick Willie. I think Willier Abreu clicks this series. He has been a little off since he came off the IL, to be expected. It happens all the time. But Willie is thick, and so is his will. I think he will hit a nuclear bomb of a home run this series. Might take until the third game, but he's going to do it.
All right, not bad. I'm going to take a little bit of a risk here and assume that Connor Wong will be back for this Padres series. I think we've seen it with Derek White. New dad energy is a real thing. And Wong coming off the paternity leave, he's got a kid now to hit a bomb for. Give me Connor Wong back to the lineup. New dad energy. He lets one fly out of Fenway.
Joe, I think the term you're looking for is dad strength. That's a good pick. If he plays, that's a really good pick. Ah, that's smart. But not
I
as mean, smart as
I was the one that I was the one that picked Yoshida. So
okay, that's true. But you know what? I'm gonna be smart here. I'm gonna use my Rafi pick. There is no way that Xander Bogaerts is walking into Fenway Park to watch three games and Rafi isn't going deep in front of him. He's going to be swinging for the moon every single time. He might have one hit the entire series, but it's going deep. And I think he might hit it off the knuckleballer. I could see him getting a hanging knuckleball and just absolutely destroying it, maybe even hitting it further than his 467, set a new career high. So, yeah, give me Rafi Devers. Let's get back on the board.
All right. So we got Gordo going with Devers, myself going with Connor Wong, and Sammy with Thick Willie.
Thick Willie.
So on that note, Sammy, I'm going to kick it to you, man. What do we got?
Everyone's favorite segment. It's time for guys being dudes.
Ooh, yeah.
Bro.
All right. New team on the books. San Diego Padres. Never won a fucking thing ever, but they are a team. Got to name a player who played for both the Red Sox and the Sad Sack Padres. Gordo, start us off.
I'm going to go with fake Pablo Sandoval. Pablo Sandoval at home. That's Abraham Almonte. He was very, very good in MLB The Show when he played for the Padres. He had a couple of stints with them, but I'm talking like the 2015 era. Really good in MLB The Show for the Padres. Not as good in his 2022 Red Sox era, in which he had a 697 OPS, which is actually way better than I remember. I remember they tried him in center field, and he looked so bad out there. If you don't remember Abraham Almonte, just try to picture Pablo Sandoval playing center field. That'll get it done. So, yeah, Abraham Almonte is my pick for this one. There were a few options, but you can't pass up an Abraham Almonte chance.
Abraham Almonte came up during a time when the Red Sox were totally in the mud. And every time the Red Sox are, like, in the mud, you always get the most insane takes. I remember people saying, like, bench Duran, bench, like, Verdugo, bench all these young guys and give Abraham Almonte a shot. And I wanted to be like, open your fucking eyes, look at Abraham Almonte and tell me
just
you
look
want
at him
playing over anybody on the field. Anyway, he was really bad. But that's a good one. That's the spirit of this segment, is guys like Abraham Almonte.
Got popped for PEDs the next offseason, by the way. But yeah, he got popped for PEDs the very next offseason.
Dude, whoever sold him those PEDs should get popped, because goddamn, they didn't work. Joe, who you got?
I'm going to go a little bit off the grid. I had a couple in mind, but I'm going to go with Josh Bard here. Starting, he was catcher extraordinaire for a time, and then he came to the Red Sox and he barely even lasted. He was traded to the Padres in 2006. That catcher dynamic was very, very weird in 2006. You obviously had Veritek and Mirabelli, but then Veritek gets hurt, and Bard comes in. Then you got Javi Lopez as well during that time. So, yeah, Josh Bard started with the Sox and then eventually traded to the Padres, and they thought he was going to be the next big thing, and he only lasted 8 years.
So underrated, Josh Bard. He played 10 years in Major League Baseball, 705 OPS, you know, OPS plus only 90. But, like, for a catcher, this guy was good. And he got so much, like, crap from Red Sox fans. I remember when they got him. That was 2006, and he barely played, but everyone was excited about it. It's just funny. Josh Bard, underrated player. Not the best, but underrated. Good. That's another good one. This is a good guys being dudes. This is what I'm talking about. All right. Fat people. We all know them. We all love them. You know who's fat?
Abraham Almonte.
Someone that is named after a breakfast food joint. That's right. Denny's Reyes. The Red Sox and the Padres. Both employed a guy whose name was Denny's. Not Denny, not Dennis, Denny's.
He was Denny's a Sox? Reyes.
He played for the Red Sox in 2011. He pitched four incredible games. Good for a 16 ERA. And then he went to the Padres. Well, I was actually with the Padres first, pitched 36 games for a nice 5.15 ERA. Denny's Reyes, 6'2". 250 thick, delicious pounds, straight out of Zaragoza, Mexico. One of the greatest Red Sox of all time. When you compare relief pitchers in Red Sox history, Denny's Reyes is always the bar. So thank you, Denny's. You're a grand slam.
He's like kind of a modern day El Guapo, or not even a modern day, like a 2000s El Guapo. That's kind of what he looked like.
But El Guapo was actually good for a little bit.
I had no idea that Denny's Reyes pitched for the Red Sox.
He did. But little love to El Guapo. 7 years with the Red Sox, 3.78 ERA, 261 games, 307.1 innings. Okay. Rich Garces, man. By the way, do you guys know what number he wore?
No. That's your
34.
Oh, wow.
The last one to wear it. Before it was worn for the last time by David Ortiz.
Anything else from you guys before we wrap this baby up?
No, I like it a lot more when the Red Sox play the games. But
Yeah.
What are you going to do? The bullpen's rested. I think this genuinely is probably a good thing for the Red Sox, as lame as tonight was.
Yep. Enjoy. Hopefully they enjoy their off day. Hopefully you enjoy your off day, and keep an eye out tomorrow. We will have episode 87 coming your way tomorrow. So be sure to be on the lookout for that. We'll be talking some trade deadline stuff, some reports from Jeff Passan. So keep an eye on their podcast feed for that. But until then, we appreciate you guys tuning in to episode 86 of Play Tessie. Before you tune out, before maybe the next day is coming, you're about to tune into episode 87. I don't know, but hit that subscribe button so you get that notification when episode 87 drops. Hit the subscribe button, Odyssey app, Apple, Spotify, wherever you're listening, and rate it 5 stars. Helps us out a ton. Check it out on YouTube. We're on the WEI page. We've got our own Play Tessie playlist. So hit the thumbs up on those videos. It helps us out a ton. And check us out on the socials at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. We appreciate you guys tuning in for this one. Sucks there was no third game to talk about, but you got to do what you got to do. We'll always be there to record for you guys, and we'll be back in your ears tomorrow if you're listening on Drop Day. So we appreciate you guys tuning in. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.